Hey, good morning, Brett.
Morning.
This is Greg at Minto.
Hey, Greg.
Dan at Willamette.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, this is Kelly. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, no problem, Kelly. We were just going around the phone here.
Andy, this is Aaron, if you didn't hear me.
Hey, Aaron.
Jeff Diller's joined us, too.
Oh, cool. Take just a minute here and get everything loaded up. Here in the room, we've got myself, Andy, and then Ryan is also here. And then on the phone, I had Dan, Greg, Kelly, Jeff, Aaron. Was Kurt on there?
I believe so.
Okay, and then Brett. Am I missing anybody? Cool. All right, well then we will go ahead and get started here. The first action item is to approve the April minutes. I think I had a couple comments from Ryan. Is that right on those? Yeah. That all looked fine to me.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and approve those with edits, and then I'll send those out. Let's see, and then the next one is the Willamette Hatchery Broodstock Pond, which is just on here for updates on funding or progress moving forward. I don't have any update on that one. And then the next one is the Lieberg property transfer update. I did ask real estate for an update on where they're at with that. And let's see here. Pull up the email from Oliver. So yesterday, Oliver told me that the cultural review has been delayed about a month beyond the expiration of the task order for the cooperative agreement. So that expires at the end of June, I believe. But Oliver said it shouldn't be a problem because they'll backdate the lease, probably up to July 1st. Uh-oh. Oh, sorry guys, my computer just kicked me out. Give me a second here. Okay. So Oliver said they'll backdate the lease and there'll be no interruption to operations for ODFW during that period. He said he hadn't had a chance to talk with you, Ryan, but he was going to call you either today or tomorrow.
Okay.
It sounds like, unfortunately, that probably will delay the roof replacement by about a month or so. Hopefully, that still leaves you a big enough window with good weather to complete it before next winter.
Okay.
And then Oliver said the disposal of the property is on schedule. The ECP, which is the environmental condition of property, is expected to be completed by mid-June. And the cultural and environmental sections of that inspection they expect to have by the end of July. And I think with all those three pieces that'll fulfill the disposal requirement, and then they'll route that for, I guess it all kind of gets compiled into a report and they'll route that for signature, and then it actually goes back to our headquarters in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So it sounds like all those different pieces will be wrapped up by the end of July. I would imagine it would take probably a month to get all the signatures and needs, go back to DC for review and all that good stuff. So progress there, it's slow, but moving along.
So that process will continue to move forward even once the lease is in place? Because one time we had talked about a longer term lease up to 5 years.
Yeah, I think that's the intention, okay. The 5-year lease.
Okay.
At this point, I mean, if it only takes a month, well, I wonder, though, and I'm not fully privy to all the details, but I wonder if that package says that we can dispose of it, that there's a good reason to, and that there's no environmental issues with it or cultural issues right. or anything like that. And then it actually goes through the process of disposal,
right.
which is where we like identify the state as someone to dispose it to. And
right.
so maybe the actual transfer of the property wouldn't occur that quickly. So that may okay. take a couple more months. But at this point, it looks like the disposal process is moving along fast enough that lease may only serve to cover maybe not even a year.
Okay. But and that's good.
Yeah.
It sounded at one point early in the discussion that the outcome of the disposal wasn't clear in terms of who the disposee, who the end owner of the property would be. Is that more clear now, or is there still some uncertainty?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more clear. Let's see, if I can't find this right away, then I'll send it to you later on. But let's see. Yeah, let's see. I might have to dig a little bit for this, but it sounds like our real estate office looked into the different possible avenues for disposal, and they found one that identifies like fish and wildlife type resources, and then identifies the state as kind of the overseer of those resources.
Okay.
And so they found some like easy way to go directly to ODFW
Perfect.
Or to the state
okay.
instead of having to put it out for like, you know, tribes get a shot or other Department of Defense agencies get a shot. So I think they found an avenue that takes it more directly to the state and
okay.
makes it more definite
awesome.
That it actually would go that way.
Yeah, my if that wasn't the case, my question was going to be, we would probably want to align the lease timing then, the lease potential end date with
right.
the cycle, right, the spring release or whatever, just so that we weren't right in the middle of a production cycle.
Sure.
But that sounds like even a better option. So
yeah, well, I think the more they've looked into it, the smoother it looks like it might be. So that's good.
Good news.
Yeah. Okay. And then the next action item on here, 1.4, is the Willamette Hatchery contract status. It's not necessarily a status for the contract, but it was more talking about taking genetic samples from the traps and then figuring out a way to do that. So we received the proposal from Kathleen O'Malley and also from ODFW for their portion of the labor. And then that's sitting with Rich Piaskowski and Ian right now. Rich did ask, because Kathleen split out her proposal by subbasin, if you could do the same thing for the labor. And based on our previous discussions, it sounds like those two EBAs would kind of be on staff.
Right.
Whether you're doing one trap or all four.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
but you could probably reduce some of the time. I don't know.
Let me look at it. Yeah, I mean, if I mean, there would be a difference between one sub-basin and four sub-basins, but say like three sub-basins
right.
to four sub-basins, I don't think there would be a difference.
Yeah, which is exactly what they're talking about, because they're talking about, okay, maybe if we have to cut something, it would be the middle fork work. And so if you dropped off those and then just had staff at Minto Foster and McKenzie Hatchery.
Right. So would that be helpful if I kind of explain that in email to you?
It would be, yeah, for sure. Okay. And then I can just send that to Rich. And if there is, yeah, and if there is any adjustment, I mean, half a month or whatever you'd knock off, you can do that.
Okay.
Okay. So that's all the action items. Ryan mentioned to me that, Kelly, you have a flow meeting coming up at 10, so if we could run through the disposition first thing, that'd be helpful to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, of course. Let me pull it up here real quick, and then if you just want to give us a little run through of the document, that'd be great. Cool. Did
you have it up right now?
I don't, but I can. Well, for the sake of time, I've got this. Yeah, I have this. Ryan's got it. Do the hatchery managers have it, or do they need it?
They should all have it.
Okay, because I can resend it out here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can send it if needed.
I got it at McKenzie.
I got it at Willamette.
I don't think I have it, Andy. Can you send it to me?
Yeah, of course.
You're going to do that, Andy?
Yeah, I will. Cool. All right. Well, we can just walk through it then with the copies that we have.
I don't actually have it handy. Hold on here.
Okay, great. I've got it.
Cool.
So you just want to start at the top and...
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So starting with the North Annie Spring Chinook hatchery brood, 541 fish, 200 females. All of those would be clipped. And then that should be aligning with the HGMP.
Yeah, that makes sense based on what I remember was in there.
Okay. Yeah, and ODFW managers, pipe up if I'm mischaracterizing anything. So, O planning above Detroit, 900 fish, 450 pairs in this case, all of them would be clipped. And that we added the Horn Creek fish into that number.
Okay.
And we also, you know, pending what comes out of any contracting, we could also take DNA or tag those fish. And that's pretty much standard for most of the O plants, I think. The Brightbush outplants, 600 fish, 300 pairs, all of them clipped. They do better if they're held at Minto till mid-August. Again, taking sampling. North Sandingham above Minto, we're going to put all of our unclipped fish there. And they should be sampled as well as possible. Fish will go to food share as they're available or for nutrients. Winter steelhead, we are putting all of those unclipped fish above Minto and then holding on to recycling to Staten if the total dissolved gases are high that year.
Is that something that's new or has that occurred in prior years? The recycling to Staten, I mean.
I'm going to defer to Brett.
I'll defer to Greg if you want.
Or Greg, sorry.
we've done that on one occasion when we had the year before last, when we had the 130% of gas, we took them down to Staten.
Okay. I believe the comment is a carryover from last year.
Yeah.
But on a normal year, it you know, it's not.
Sure.
Just kind of a situational.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think we took 9 fish down there and we saw 7 of them back.
Huh, okay. Cool.
Greg, did you then put them above Minto the second time around?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're not going to be recycling summer steelhead any longer. So they can go to the food share. Any coho would be going to food share. Any resident fish that show up, we're going to put upstream of Minto. And lamprey putting up upstream of Minto. Any questions on the North Sania?
Not necessarily a question, but just a comment that reminded me.
Yeah.
I owe Dave Jepson a call because I know he was asking some questions about this. But as far as... like taking DNA or Floyd tagging fish that are outplanted above dams, in the contract that the Corps awarded for spawning surveys and carcass recovery, that's just for below dams. And I don't know if there's any more research-focused studies that are looking at pre-spawn mortality or collecting carcasses above dams, especially in the North Sandy Dam. I think there's something kind of in the works for the Middle Fork, perhaps, but there's no good mechanism right now, unfortunately, to make use of those Floyd tags. I think it's definitely still worth it to take those DNA samples because they could be analyzed in future years, but yeah, there won't be any kind of pre-spawn mortality or carcass recovery or really spawning surveys of any sort upstream of dams that the Corps has planned. So just kind of an FYI, I guess, to you guys.
And you're going to give Dave a call on that? Is that what I heard you say?
I will. Yeah, I got a note from Rich Piskowski the other day to get back to Dave and to communicate that to him, because it sounds like Dave might be trying to coordinate some surveys to look at the spots that the Corps contract has missed.
Okay. I'll check in with Dave and let me know what the outcomes of those conversations are.
Cool.
Yeah, and really that was, I think I'd asked you last week maybe about the status of the M&E contract.
Right.
And it was essentially for that reason. I followed up with Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So I just asked that he keep us in the loop on the timeline, and then at some point the scope of the work, at least when you guys get that back from the selected contractor.
Right.
Because it does sound like Dave's crew, Luke Whitman's crew, essentially is going to have some presence in the sub-basin, somewhat depending on what that survey scope
sure
is.
Okay, cool. Did Chris tell you that it was awarded?
He sounded like it was still being reviewed.
It was just awarded yesterday, I think.
Okay.
Or on Tuesday. And I think it's public knowledge now because it's awarded, but it went to Normando and Associates. We're actually going to have a call with them this afternoon as kind of like a pre-work meeting. And that'll help clarify with their biologists and field crews on what exactly that'll look like.
Okay.
So I'll give Dave a call after that, and then
perfect.
Hopefully we can cover all the bases and okay. Make sure everything's covered as far as meaningful surveys go. All right.
Yeah, that'd be useful.
Yeah, sorry to hijack this, Kelly.
No, that's fine. It's good to know. And I mean, for our planning purposes, the sooner we have that information, the better.
Right, for sure. Cool.
Okay, South Sandia, now Brett. Sorry. Hatchery for brood, 717 fish, 269 females, all of them clipped. And again, that should align, all of these numbers hopefully are aligning with HDMPs, and if you see any discrepancies, let us know. South Sandia above Foster Dam, all of the unclipped fish, and again, the same, I think that same caveat, again, with the DNA employ, and that'll depend on those later conversations. But I agree, taking those DNA samples is really important, even if we aren't going to analyze them immediately. Tribal, as available, food share is available, selling is available, no recycling with spring chinook in the South Sandia. Nothing put above Green Peak. At this time, winter steelhead, all of them above Foster. Brood, collecting 12 to 1400 for summers, no recycling. No recycling, unclipped, all available. Food share, as available, the residents, all above Foster, if there's a truck.
Huh. Why would there not be a truck?
Basically, so it's like, let's say you get a cutthroat, and there's no winter steelhead or spring chinook adult to go up. Do you take the cutthroat, six-inch cut up above?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, that's kind of what, you know, so it's like if the truck's going up there anyway, we'll throw them all in. If not, we just put them down the bypass tube.
Gotcha.
Below the dam.
This seems reasonable. Is there a, there's probably not a good way to move them back into the pre-sort pool.
So, you could you could put them in a net and run them up there.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, if you're...
I guess probably a bucket would be more, especially the smaller fish, what we would do is put them in a bucket with water.
Yeah, just so they wouldn't have to climb the ladder again.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's always question my mind if they're trying to get up, but usually we see those fish when the spring chinook are spawning, you know.
Right.
And so they're up there trying to eat, you know. I don't know if they're necessarily trying to migrate upstream.
Right.
I don't know that.
Are we good on that one?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Mackenzie. Kurt. 730 fish, 365 pairs. That's all obviously of the clipped ones. Any unclipped ones coming into the hatchery, we'll release at Greenwood until we can start integrating. Tribal fish as available. Outplanting above cougar. So we're talking about the two strikes and you're out here, is that right? These are for fish returning to the base of at the base of Cougar Dam in the trap there. And then we'll be using the hatchery fish to kind of top off to those thresholds to meet that 400 females, 200 males. So, any questions on that one?
I guess the only question...
So that's what we've done the last 3 years, I think.
What was that?
I think that's what we've done the last 2 to 3 years, you know, trying to not go above that number by supplementing what they've already moved themselves from the cougar trap.
Right. Andy, you had a question?
Yeah. I guess my question is just that this kind of two strikes and you're out, or two strikes and then you get to go above, that's still kind of considered an interim operation. We're not seeing that as the long-term operation?
No, I mean, once we have passage where fish are going to survive, then we're going to put them up there. But until that point, I don't see a lot of value in putting them up there unless they've really shown us that they want to go.
Right. So can we do another memorandum of coordination like we did for past years just to document that we're going to continue to do this?
Did we talk about putting this in the the spot?
Yeah, that's right.
I think Tammy had talked about maybe putting it in the W FOT.
Right.
And then we wouldn't have to do an annual memorandum, and you know, you can write the language in there saying it's until we have adequate passage.
So I went back
and looked. I mean, what works better at your end?
So I went back and looked at prior years, and it had kind of the standard language about just passing above, and then the MOC modified that for each year, right? And we did that, I think, in 16 and 17.
Right.
The 18, I thought what we agreed on when we went through the WFOP was that, and I think the way it's written, although I'll admit I read it a couple times, not 100% sure I understand it, but I think the intent is that this process and this table determines the outcome of the disposition.
Oh,
because
interesting.
In the section where it used to be specific to the activity, it calls out disposition table review through HMT.
Right.
So that's the way I read it, that this review and approval, if you will, would be that MOC or be that process through water to create that standard for 2018.
Oh, okay.
Again, that's my interpretation. You guys might see it a little bit different.
I think that makes sense, because when I went back and looked at it a couple weeks ago, it didn't really say either way what was kind of the standard or status quo operation there.
Right.
And it could kind of be interpreted different ways. So, yeah, maybe it was more through the disposition discussion each year.
So.
Yeah. I'll go back and talk with Tammy, and then maybe we can bring it up next week at the Willamette FPAW meeting. and see if this suffices, like our discussion here, or if we need to go through a formal MOC. But even if we do, I would assume it would be exactly the same as the one that was used last year, so it's probably not that much work. So,
okay, well, let me know.
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that one, Kelly.
All right, thank you. So about Trail Bridge, 120 fish, 60 pairs. And I guess we're getting closer to having passage up there too.
Right. 2020.
50 pairs as available to go into the Mohawk. And then as available for stream enrichment, selling, and for the food share. Summer steelhead recycling. Do you get many fish?
We had, I think, 20 last year. Yeah, that's not typically what we get, you know. If we get up to 50, that's a big year, so.
Well. And then residents going back into the river, including lamprey. Lamprey and cougar put back in the river, but we start to get a bunch of them. We can be working with our other agencies to figure out if we want to put them up together. Any more questions on the McKenzie?
Yeah, so another question for you guys, and Chad and Doug asked me to bring this up because they're actually out running the traps today, but with the rock slide up above on, I think it's Forest Service Road 19, up above the dam, so even though the facility is actually back up online now, they can't really outplant fish into the normal outplanting sites until that's cleared. I think the latest from the Forest Service was June would be the earliest, and July is maybe worst case scenario for getting that cleared and the road open again. So those folks were looking for a little direction on what we should do with spring Chinook that come into the facility prior to that road being opened. Sounds like there's a couple possibilities. They could actually get them into the reservoir, it sounds like.
Hey, Andy.
Yeah.
This is Chris Walker.
Oh, hey, Chris.
So since you moved your hatchery meeting to Thursday, it's now conflicting with the flow.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not quite sure how to remedy this situation.
I say you guys duke it out.
Duke it out. We can duke it out over the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea, Jeff.
Well, actually, it works out for Kelly really well because she was going to have to leave our call and join yours.
It is all about me, Andy. You don't know me well enough.
We coordinated this all for you, Kelly. Chris, we can switch to the Columbia FPOM line.
Yeah, because there's going to be a bunch of people calling in either way.
Yeah,
if
sure.
You're good, that'd be awesome. And I'll buy you a beer or something.
Oh, perfect. Oh, it's my mistake anyway, so yeah, I'll take it.
Do you say just me or everybody?
It sounds like rounds all the way. So,
thanks, Chris.
We'll talk about that.
So folks on the HMT call, that's my bad for scheduling this over Chris's meeting. I will send you all the Columbia FPOM call-in line, which is actually the one we used to use a couple months ago. And then we'll hang up here and rejoin here in just a minute.
Hey, I'm going to join the flow call. I'm pretty sure Dan can explain the Middle Fork stuff better than I can anyway.
Okay, sounds good. All right, Chris, I'm going to hang up, and I'm the host.
Oh, right.
You don't even have to call in again.
Actually, she might. All right, so I've got Dan back, and it sounded like somebody else.
Kurt finally made it.
Oh, hey, Kurt.
And Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Greg.
I may have to bail, though, to get on that other call. There's some stuff I got to talk about there.
All right, well, we'll try to buzz through the Middle Fork here real quick. Did Aaron make it back on?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay. Thank you for the password there, Aaron.
Yeah, sure. I should have just hosted it for you.
Yeah, might have been faster. All right, cool. Dan, do you want to take us, or Jeff, do you want to take us through the Middle Fork?
I'll let Dan do it.
Cool.
Okay, brood stock, 1,500 pairs. Still discussion on what we're doing with any unclipped fish returning to the trap. It's going to depend on what we decide of where they're going, plus truck availability.
Hold on one second. Andy, right before we left, you were talking about the rock slide and how people could not find a good place for outplanting. We didn't finish that conversation.
Oh, right. Yeah. Thanks for that, Aaron. So maybe, Jeff, while you're still on the line, I think you get the gist of it, but we're looking for some direction on either not actually running the ladder and letting fish hold below Cougar Dam, or outplanting them into the reservoir. Got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do, because we have bull trout up there also, so it's not just a Chinook issue.
Right.
So I would prefer to run the trap, and you know, to some extent, we can put fish up into the reservoir down that road that goes right down the face of the dam.
Right.
But I'm a little bit hesitant. I don't know how warm the surface water will be at that time.
Sure.
So it's a big question mark. You know, who knows what we're going to have. So far this spring, we're certainly a little bit warmer than, if not a lot warmer than normal.
Right.
And by the way, I heard at the last Watershed Council meeting that it might be July. July is not a worst case scenario necessarily.
Oh yeah.
It might be a best case scenario.
Oh yeah, the shifting goalpost. Interesting. Okay. So yeah, see, it sounds like your preference then would be try to operate the trap and outplant
periodically.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it doesn't need to be operated quite as often, but be ready to, you know, move fish and maybe even look at the weather and see if it happens to be a good time, cloudy day, you know, we've had some cool weather, whatever, and work it a little bit more on the fly.
Right. Yeah, and keep an eye on the surface temperatures in the reservoir.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It is possible to go around the other side still, right? Around the East Fork side?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check with those guys. They'd know better than me.
I didn't hear that it was closed off there, and unless the Forest Service closed it for some reason. It's just a rough road.
Right. And I think I did hear last month that at some point the Forest Service might allow kind of special vehicles through as needed before it opens back up to the public. So there may be a chance that we can't actually get our trucks through there, because they're going to need at some point to also move equipment along the road to do the repair. So right. Yeah, we may be able to work with them and actually get up there earlier than kind of the general public opening.
Sure. Once I get the rocks off, anyway.
Right. Okay. Cool. Thanks for that, Jeff.
Sure.
And thank you for the reminder, Aaron. Okay. So back on track, Dan. I'll turn it back over to you to go through the rest of this.
Okay, again, back to the outplanting of the unmarked fish. Still need discussion on that of what we're doing. Tribal use, of course, as available, depending on what McKenzie and South San Diem do, if there's any need for them. Outplants above lookout. I still haven't heard for sure about the LOP study, if we're still going to go with half the fish as we did it last year, or if we're going to go to the total 1350.
So last year we had reduced that to 675, and Dan planted right about that 677 or something like that. So do you know anywhere?
I don't know, but I can go and check with those guys and see where they're at. Yeah, that'll be an action item for me. So I'll check on that lookout point survival study design and see kind of what their requirements are or what their requests are, and I'll get back to you guys.
Sounds good.
Perfect.
Yeah, preliminarily, I thought that the study was not going to be conducted next year, so that should eliminate any need to drop the numbers.
So, Jeff, what's your preference on the unmarked fish?
I had a talk with Lance about that, and there really aren't any great options. And you know, we'd like to see someplace where they could survive, and there just isn't any place in the below the dam that really is conducive to survival. Probably the best use of those fish is in hatchery brood stock, but we don't have an HGMP yet to cover that. So that's where we landed, is that's the best use of the fish, but we can't do that yet.
Right. So in the meantime, the North Fork, Middle Fork seems like a good option.
It's an option. I wouldn't call it a good option because those fish are lost to the system.
Yeah. Next best, I guess.
Well, the other part of that is if we're collecting brood, we don't have the trucks to just send one fish clear up the North Fork.
Right.
What do we do with it? You know, if we get two fish in out of the 1,000 that we're working that day, what are we going to do with two fish?
Yeah.
I hate to give you this option, but it's to me, it's the only one that makes sense right now, and that is slide them back down the pipe. And then at some point, maybe we'll have an HGMP that allows us to bring it in the brood stock, and then you can bring them up later in the year if you happen to get them again.
Perfect. Okay, on to the next one is outplant above Hills Creek, 300 minimum, 1,100 to 3,000 in the past is what we have done. We usually try to make sure that we hit the North Fork or the Middle Fork first with outplants to get their numbers, and then whatever is left we start putting above Hills Creek Dam. There's only two sites on the Middle Fork that we can use. One of them is at Patty's Valley, and the other one is the campground that's down lower, where we actually take a 20-foot pipe with us to get them into the river. So our options are limited as far as where they're going into the upper Middle Fork. The next one is 50 into Little Fall Creek. This has kind of been every now and again we put fish up there. Jeff, do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, if we have a truck available and we can get them in there early enough in the spring, we might want to put 50 up there. And we'll kind of work with you a little bit. We may want to radio tag a fish or two out of that just to see a fish or 10 to see how quickly they move out of Little Fall Creek. And then if we get some kind of idea how many fish have moved, we may want to move some more fish up there just prior to spawning.
Okay. Sold to the buyers as available. Steelhead being recycled just down the tube. Resident fish the same. We don't see very many in there. I've never seen a lamprey. And Fall Creek is not my talk.
Okay.
Well, cool. We're still on the Middle Fork. So we did, ODFW received a request again this year from the Burns Paiute Tribe to repeat that spring Chinook transfer over to Malakir.
Mm-hmm.
NIMS had given permission and identified the mill stock as kind of the ideal population to draw from. So we would like to do that. Dan hasn't yet opened the trap. So, you know, we're tracking Willamette Falls counts. We're in conversation with the tribe. But I guess just to get that on your radar, and we will, I'll have to go back and look at the letter from NIMS, but I think it says, you know, submit formal notification to the Corps and NIMS 2 weeks in advance or something along those lines. But just sure. As a heads up.
Okay, cool.
I think the initial request was 200 fish last year with the run size. I think we took 150 males, and so that's what we would shoot for this year, would be 150 males. So
makes
really
sense.
Shouldn't affect brooder or out planning.
Okay.
For
the Middle
Fork.
Cool.
And that's all funded by the tribe, not the Burns Paiute.
Gotcha.
Any issues you see, I'll just notify you in a couple
no,
of
weeks. No, I don't think so. Yeah, it seems fine.
Sounds good.
So I guess another issue that affects all these sub-basins is whether or not HGMPs would be approved by the time spawning would actually occur.
Right.
And what we've been hearing from Lance sounds like they're that is a possibility. Like maybe in June or July they'd get HGMPs approved. So if they are approved, is that too late for you guys to start incorporating natural origin broodstock? Are you going to plan like they won't get approved and have enough hatchery origin broodstock to take as many eggs and meet the goals as possible? And if they do get improved, try to get your hands on natural origin fish. What's kind of the operating plan at this point?
Good question. I think probably the latter. Probably I think we need to operate under the assumption that we won't incorporate unmarked fish in brood.
You don't want to end up short.
Right. And so then if they are and we have the discussion about incorporating, then we would collect whatever we can get our hands on.
Right.
But holding, you know, holding fish now, I think we'd probably be outside of our authority to hold those.
I would agree.
I mean, I guess you could hold them and call them, not brood, but, you know, call them something else, but I think we'd probably want to avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call. Okay. And if they are approved at the end of June or in July, what do you I guess it maybe depends on which trap we're talking about, but is that enough time to actually get a meaningful number of natural origin broodstock?
What do you guys think, Dan? Kurt? Greg? Brett?
I think for the Middle Fork, it's, you know, you just never know what time of the year they're going to come in. Usually it's later in the run that we see some of the unmarked fish, but we have no way of holding them prior to you know, getting the okay of the HGMP, so ours is just going to be, if they get signed from that moment on, we'll start taking what we can up for brood. You know, by July, we would have our main brood stock, so it would just be any pre-spawn mortality makeup numbers, but of course, we would try to get fish would bring up for sure.
On the Mackenzie last year, we picked up a fair number of fish in that first part of July, and then we always get a pretty good push there in September. So if we needed to start incorporating in September, if indeed we were given the okay, we could do that in September.
Okay.
Cool.
Seems to be, at least I'm looking at the records from last year, it looks like we picked up, I don't know, about 40 males in September, but only about 10 females, so a little bit, last year was heavy on males in that time period.
When they ask about the incorporation, is it 10% wild on wild, or just 10% of the total is wild? I guess I don't know if I ever understood that.
I think the way I interpret it is that it just 10% of the total. So if you spawn 200 females, 20 of them would be, up to 20 would be unmarked.
But a mix on the spawn, right? I mean, you know, hatchery, wild, there's a just a random spawn.
Yeah, I don't know if Greg's, I mean, Greg's always sort
of... I'm asking Greg. That, you know. You know, I think that's what Greg is asking. Do we need to do wild to wild, or do we hatchery, wild, you know? In the past, that's what we've done, just hatchery and wild. Whenever they came through, we would just go ahead and spawn.
Yeah, I think... you know, feel free to jump in others, but I would think it would just be random if you wouldn't, other than noting that it had a fin and was unmarked, you wouldn't treat it any different. You would just pull it out of the anesthetic tank and spawn it, and, you know, one fish out of 10 on that rack was unclipped, and you just...
Yeah, the way we mark them too, or not mark them, but the way we track them is if we have a wild fish in any of the pairs, we know where it went, so that we would keep our hands on those eggs for sure.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Be it a male or a female.
Yeah, but I don't think you would need to or want to necessarily spawn that with another wild fish, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I know there's a couple different protocols out there. Grant County PUD does some crazy stuff, but they're trying to meet certain P&I goals.
Okay.
So they're trying to get their P knob up to a certain level, but they're taking like one wild female and crossing it with like four hatchery males and trying to, yeah, do some weird multi-cross stuff. So there's different ways to approach it. I don't know. It might be a good question to discuss with Lance and others and just kind of see what's out there. And
could be challenging. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Good conversation. It could be challenging with our BKD calling program.
Right.
Anything other than a one-to-one mating?
Yeah, you may not want to,
right,
just because you want to keep those eggs incorporated as much as possible.
Yeah.
And then the other thing we've talked about before is that when you do start incorporating natural origin broodstock, we would want to take the otolith from those fish and make sure they're not just misclips.
Sure, that's a good point.
And make sure they're actually true natural origin brood, and then have those otoliths read. So that'll, on my end, I think that will change probably how the contract's written, because it'll add a little bit of scope to the work,
mm-hmm,
taking otoliths and then having them read, and then, of course, an increased cost with that. So.
Yeah, and that's what we have done in the past, Andy, is always taking an otolith from those potentially wild fish.
Cool, yeah. Yeah, so maybe we can have another discussion with Lance and see if it looks like this is going to be a possibility, make sure we know exactly how we're going to go about it this first year, do it the right way. Cool.
Jeff, are you still on? Doesn't sound like it. I was going to ask about Lieberg ladder and plans there. I know Jeff was thinking a bit about some options for sorting fish. Do you know, from the Corps' perspective, any plans to do anything at the Lieberg ladder?
I don't think the Corps has any plans to do anything there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then the PHAS assessment would simply be below Lieberg Dam's bonus arrays through the M&E contract?
Well, I think in the McKenzie, it does include the main stem and then the South Fork up to the base of Cougar Dam.
Okay.
I'll have to go back and look at the scope of work because we want to make sure we get that one right. But I think McKenzie does include the main stem all the way up to Trail Bridge.
Right.
Is that the,
okay,
yeah, the next one?
Okay.
So, yeah, we would have a PHAS calculation off that, and then also, of course, off the Lieberg dam counts. But as far as like trapping and removing hatchery fish from Lieberg,
yeah, well, even the Lieberg dam counts.
Oh, right.
I'm trying to think if that I'm not sure if that's something.
This is Jeff. I'm back.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, we were just talking about Lieberg ladder, Lieberg dam operation.
Yep.
I know you had some thoughts about sorting there. Has that gone anywhere? Do we
have? It's a wild idea in my imagination as at this point, but I have some thoughts. Jeremy and I went down and took a look at it the other day when we were up there working at Leeburg, and there's some possibilities that we could have a hand-operated sorter at the fish ladder on the left bank, and the fish would be diverted. The hatchery fish would be diverted into a net pen, and the other fish would just swim right on out. Anyway, it's okay. Food for thought, and I think it would be an awful good idea to be looking at trying to do something like that.
Yeah. So for this year, for 2018, do you know, is Mike planning on operating the camera counter system?
The camera will be in operation. Nobody's going to be counting though. It'll be recorded.
Okay. There you go.
So we won't have Leeburg Dam counts.
Not unless somebody wants to contribute.
But the video is going to be recorded?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So it could be reviewed by potentially our M&E contractor.
Sure.
So are we talking about no fish being taken out of the ladder and coming to McKenzie Hatchery this year?
Or maybe a lot of them, if we can figure out a system up there.
Okay, so the majority of that, 99% of the movement last year was August and September. I think there's two entries in July, the rest of it was all August, September.
What do you mean of the movement?
Fish trapped and transferred down here from Leeburg Dam.
Right. What we were talking about doing was trying to get something in there earlier than what Cam had done.
Okay, and you're talking about possible hand-operated sorter?
Yeah. Okay. Just shunt them one way or the other. Have somebody actually looking at the monitor as they're up there. Granted, we don't have any money for this.
Right.
Cool. All right. Thanks for that, Jeff and Kurt. Anything else on the disposition discussion for this year? All right. Great. Well, then we will move into updates. So let's start at Marion Forks and Minto.
Up in Marion Forks, everything's going well. We were able to spawn all our Chinook outside last week. Numbers and size look good. Waters are a little bit warmer than normal, but everything's going well up there. Down in Minto, collection so far, 134 winter steelhead and 7 summer steelhead. Everything's going well here, just cleaning up the ponds and getting ready for the adult season.
Cool. All right. South San Yam and Foster. Brad, are you still on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry. We're just started. I guess as the contract requires, we're starting to work the trap 3 times a week now, but really not much in it yet. We've only got 5 summers so far, 27 winters, and no spring Chinook in the pre-sort yet. But I guess we did see a few kind of hanging out in the ladder, so just haven't decided they wanted to swim in, but they're there. As far as the hatchery stuff goes, juveniles are doing okay. We just have the summers on hand right now. they're starting to show a few signs of cold water. Pathology kind of picked up a few signs of cold water, but the mortality is still really low, so we're not going to treat that yet. We're going to see what happens. We're working on a heating upgrade, spending the rest of that budget. That's going to happen in June, so we've got that all set up, so that should get finalized here before that money goes away. And then just been kind of spend some time working on filling the vacant tech position here. So that process is underway, and hopefully we'll have that taken care of and a person in place in July. That's about it for us.
Cool. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Move on to McKinsey.
Well, our trap's been open since May 1st. Today, I looked in there. There's probably 40 Chinook in there, maybe one summer steelhead. We haven't gone through them or anything, like I handled them or anything. They're just in the collection channel. There's been a bit of effort for angling down below the fish hatchery. We're trying to educate our new neighbor down there. He doesn't like anglers in his front yard there, but that's going to be ongoing for a while, I believe. He just actually decided to take the sign and move it. So we took the sign back. But anyway, that's something we're working on. We have a vacant house here at the hatchery where we recently had a small business come in, and they removed all the asbestos popcorn ceiling out of that house. We're also now in the process of doing some mold abatement it's been minor right now, so we just want to make sure it doesn't get any worse than what it is. I've got a painter coming in next week to paint the whole interior of the house, and then we've got dehumidifiers in there and things going on just to try to keep that from having any troubles. That particular house was built right on an old pond from years back. We have a sump underneath the house. It does pump water out of there. So summertime usually just pretty good in that house, but right now we're trying to keep a handle on it. Juveniles, good health on the juveniles. We had a tiny bit of Cassia that Amy picked up last week, but nothing in treatable numbers. Like what Brett said, she thought she might have seen a little bit of cold water. She never did get back to me on any positives on her plate, so I'm taking that as probably nothing happening there, and mortality is real low, so everything's doing real well there. We'll probably split those fish in a couple weeks here and get them ready for fin clipping later on in June. Lots of maintenance around the grounds, just cleaning up a lot of different things. Other than that, everything going well.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Did the landowner mention anything, Kurt?
I'm not talking to him, Jeff. I don't even know if he's around. I he's got guys over there building a shed. There's always activity over there, but I don't see the guy. I'm not going to go knock on his door, but.
Are they still working on that fill?
Nah, they kind of stopped stuff back there. I do notice that they have some sprinklers that they've installed, but I think those were kind of in the process when we last talked.
Okay.
But you know what? They're pretty much almost done with that anyway, so.
Yeah, there's an enforcement file on it now at the county.
Okay.
What's an enforcement file, Jeff?
That's when somebody's done something potentially illegally and their enforcement officers start working on the details of what went badly for them.
Gotcha. So this would be like that landowner adjusting the,
yeah,
the fishing boundary?
No, no. It's he put in a tremendous amount of fill in the 100-year floodplain.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, it looked like they did some pretty massive landscaping down there.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. All right, thanks, Kurt.
Yeah.
So Chad and Doug aren't here today, but they sent me a little update. So the Cougar Adult Fish Facility went back online last weekend, and it's operational. They're having some issues, of course, with those pumps. It sounded like some fragile seals were the culprit, and they had a manufacturer's rep come out, take a look at them, and go through the process together with the guys. So it sounds like right now it's up and running. And we'll see how it goes. And I will pass along our discussion of kind of how to operate that facility as we move forward in the season to those guys after our meeting today. And then as far as the Fall Creek facility, the new facility there, they started the trap and haul on the 25th of April. And then when Doug sent me his update on the 14th, 3 days ago, they said that they've collected and transported 21 winter steelhead, one spring Chinook adult, and a whole bunch of trout, suckers, and other whitefish. So that's what's going on there.
21's a big number.
Yeah. Those fish were ready to go.
It is. I compared to last few years, that's nice. There was one year where we had one male and I think three females. He had a good time.
Yeah. All right, moving on to Willamette and Dexter.
Okay, for Willamette, everything's going good up here. We're getting ready for our marking. Trailers are coming in this weekend, supposedly, and we will set up on Monday, start marking Tuesday, and it looks like we get two trailers, and they'll be here for at least a month, doing all the springers and the steelhead. We will start backfilling Dexter as soon as the fish are clipped. We turned water on down there yesterday, so we're getting everything filled back up and probably open the trap at the end of next week or the day after Memorial Day, somewhere in there, and see what we get in on that side. Other than that, everything's going good.
Cool. So, Dan, as you probably know, some of the folks from the Willamette Valley Maintenance Group have been down there at Dexter, been talking with Graham Hilson a little bit, and then Tim Stratus has been down there taking a look at that power line. And that's their main concern right now, just because of the health and safety issue. Have you talked with Tim at all about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I believe that he's going to go down tomorrow and put an insulator on top of that building to try to lift that power line up for now and then go yep. from there.
Yep, exactly. It sounds like that won't be too costly. He was saying maybe about $1,000 in materials. And then Tim said maybe 30 hours of labor. So I don't know if that's 30 hours of one person, which would take us most of the way through a week. It sounds like they'll probably have a couple folks down there. So I'm hoping that they can complete all of that next week and it won't delay opening the trap at all. But that'll be good to get that taken care of, at least for the interim, and then start looking at a long-term solution there and probably replacing some of those power poles. I went back and looked at the operational condition assessment that some folks did, I think it was last year, the year before down at Dexter. They went through and took a look at all the different assets and then tried to assign them a condition. The power poles were in there and they were consigned condition B or a grade B, which is like A through F, kind of like regular grades. So it wasn't necessarily pointed out there, but then looking at what that rating says, I don't necessarily agree that that's where they are now. So, but it did list the date, and the date for the power poles was 1954. So, yeah, wow. Those are probably the original ones, and they're due to be
the other day.
What's that?
Just the other day.
Yeah. So, anyways, it'll probably be a larger long-term fix there. Looking at the the valve that failed for the water that supplies the sorting facility. I don't know if Tim talked to you about that one at all, Dan, but it sounds like that might be a little bit of a longer fix, and it might actually delay opening of the trap beyond what is really possible this year. So that one might have to wait until next year.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said for short term that they were talking about just taking a sump pump and putting down there on a float system in case something did start leaking.
Right.
And, you know, I think Doug and I both told him that, you know, if something does break down there, we're just going to have to make sure that we can get that bulkhead, you know, slid into place pretty quickly, or we're just going to be pumping water out all over the place.
Right. Yeah, with no good way to stop it. Okay. I think, given the kind of larger risk with this, Tammy suggested that I write this up as a memorandum of coordination to just notify everyone in the region of what's going on and the risks that we might have going into the season. So you might see something like that come out, and then it'll probably get discussed at Willamette FPOM next week. Just so folks kind of understand what the implications are if something does fail and we're not able to get that bulkhead in, what that means for passage and also for hatchery operations.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, for as far as adult collection and stuff, it's going to stop. I mean, there's no way of running that system. For juveniles, you know, with it being an 8-inch line, it's probably not going to affect that part of it too much, except for the fact that there's going to be an 8-inch line blasting water all over the facility with no way of shutting it off. And so if you do put that bulkhead in to, you know, we're going to have everything ready to go to find some place to cap off whatever lines broke in a quick manner so that we can get that bulkhead pulled back out. So.
Right. And again, I mean, the likelihood of something failing down there is hard to know for sure what that level of risk is, but you were telling me earlier you already have at least one pipe or a connection to a valve that's leaking already?
Yeah, one of the main lines down there has been leaking, and that's how we found that the valve was inoperable, is we tried to shut it off so that we could change that valve out, and we can't shut it off, so.
Right. Okay.
And that's the one that's next to the ladder that's 9 feet in the ground.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Well, more to come on that one, but thanks, Dan.
Yep.
Hey, Dan, are we still waiting for Perry to get us something back on that issue? Wasn't Perry going to dig into that as well?
Correct. He was supposed to look into, you know, what it was going to take for a vault, an engineered vault for that area. And I've never heard anything back from him. Okay. In the meantime, we had found a spot where we could have cut into the line underneath the tower and added a valve, a shutoff valve, that would at least shut the tower down. So if something did break up there, we'd be able to go down there and close it off. But you also have underneath that tower is all the electrical panels. So if something broke inside in that room, you're spraying water all over 480 volt panels that I think there's 8 or 10 of them right there. So it's quite the safety concern. And I think that's why Tim wanted to put that sump pump in there just in case. And it was just going to be a permanent hookup so that if it did for some reason start flooding, it would kick on and pump water out the door at least. But, you know, as far as putting that valve in to shut off the tower, we just ran out of time. The company that we had give us bids on it, they were just too backed up and couldn't get to it before. Well, I think it's now, it's like the end of June before they could get back at it. So we wouldn't be able to run the trap or anything until then. So.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. So, Andy, is there still value in trying to push our engineers a bit on that? Or is it something that you think Tim and his crew are going to handle? I mean, you know, when we met with Perry, we looked at it from kind of a couple of different approaches. One being, you know, what would it take to replace the entire section of pipeline, the header right. pipe to the juvenile ponds, and, you know, the valve, install vault, and then kind of have that as a package of, if you just did this, you know, package A, you know, et cetera.
Sure. Right.
I know Berg was working on it. You know, they're in the middle of their busy season. I can poke him and try to follow up with him, unless you think it's more likely that it would be a core in-house solution.
At this point, I think it's more likely it would be a core in-house solution.
Okay. I'll wait then.
Yeah, I need to circle back with Graham and Tim and see. I mean, I know Tim was saying this is something that will probably have to be addressed in FY19. But when we originally brought this up, those guys were like, oh, well, do we need to work overtime this weekend? I mean, we can get on it right away. And trying to figure out exactly like what it would take and right. what is, do we don't want to bite off more than we can chew here or actually put back together in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I think it'll probably be in-house if it's anything.
And I don't know how you feel, Dan, but maybe given that we are talking about it now and schedule in advance, maybe a schedule for the shutdown period next spring.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's our only option at this point. I think, you know, because we're going to have to start moving fish down there in the next couple weeks and have the adults return, and we're just past the point of where we can stop and not do the fish culture needs.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I mean, not ideal, but at right. least there's a path. So.
Yeah. Tim actually suggested to me that it might be ideal when we do go in and do a repair to disconnect that old water feed and install a new lateral feed and bring it up to ground level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to inspect and also maintain, and then reconnect that in this sump area after you penetrate the wall. So
okay.
it sounds like they would kind of maybe even bypass the old stuff and just bring it up to the ground and move it over. So
cool.
All right. Brian, do you have any update on Lieber Hatchery and fish culture that's going on there?
No. So as of the summer steelhead release, you know, and the last week trout went out probably earlier this month, and so they are fishless from now at least through the end of June.
Okay.
So performing a well do maintenance. Much of the facility probably hasn't been dewatered in many years just because of the yeah. trout cycles. So they're able to shut some things down, clean out header boxes. It was well overdue.
Cool.
So that's really the only update I have. I guess a question, thinking back now to the conversation earlier about the lease, we were, I think, all working under the assumption that July 1 would be, the lease would be in place. It sounds like with the cultural review, that delayed would push it back. Just so that I guess I'm clear, it didn't sound like that Oliver was willing to backdate the lease. So is it safe to assume that we could presume production July 1st?
I would think so.
Okay.
From his email to me, it sounded like there would be no interruption to operations.
Right.
For you guys.
Okay. And as of July 1, there isn't, Corps isn't funding production program, so it seems right. like a pretty clean break and transition.
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
I know in the extension to the task order for Lieber, I think it said that all the trout that were associated with core funding would be out by the end of April.
Right.
Something like that. So, yeah, there's more than enough kind of a time buffer there, I would think. The only other thing I'd ask is that you just look at any of the invoicing or billing and make sure that's all wrapped up and charged against that task order and the funding that's within it.
Okay.
Because I think last time I looked, our funding folks were trying to de-obligate anything that was expired. And so they'll probably look at that one sometime soon, knowing that it's coming up on its expiration.
Okay, and I saw some of those emails from Rhea and our fiscal folks, and yeah, some of them were really goofy, like, and I don't know if it was that we hadn't billed properly. I don't know where the disconnect was, but the core folks were trying to de-obligate accounts, which, from what I was seeing, were spent out. So there was a disconnect. I don't know where that occurred. But.
Yeah, and I've seen some weird stuff like that, too, where I've looked at line items for hatcheries or whatever and thought, well, that's way too much money for it to be finished for the year.
Right.
We were probably just waiting on receiving a bill.
And that could be the case.
And I think that's probably what the case is for a lot of that stuff, but some of them had like hundreds of thousands of dollars in them, and I was like, I don't think we should try to de-obligate that. I think we need to wait for a bill.
Yeah.
But just to maybe look into Lieberg and wrap that one up, because I know folks would be looking at that one soon.
Sounds good.
Cool. All right, so that's all for updates. And then just a quick contract status update for me. I entered the option year award. They call it a cabinet in the software I'm supposed to use. It's basically the notification to our contracting office to start working on the award for the Willamette hatcheries. And that has to be awarded by September 1st, so all the work kind of on my part is done, and then contracting will start moving forward on that. I don't foresee really any hiccups or problems there. It should be fairly smooth sailing. Depending on what happens with the HGMPs, however, and if we're incorporating natural origin broodstock and then also taking and reading otoliths, that may change the scope of work. So we need to take a look at that. And then the other real big piece for if we get HGMPs approved is the funding and production of McKenzie hatchery,
right,
and whether that will increase immediately up to $605,000 or whether that'll be, we do that at the next available option period in the contract, which is actually going to be a new contract. So whether or not it'd be modded, I guess, for the 2019 production.
Okay.
And that's what I need to look into. The question for our attorney is basically to go back and look at that settlement agreement and determine, once that HGMP gets approved, is that an immediate switch for the Corps to fund additional production beyond 360? Or is it you do it when you have the next chance to do it? And that's also probably a discussion.
You know what our preference would be.
I have a guess, Jeff.
Although, I mean, I understand that, Andy, but if you think about the timing of the brood cycle, like, that kind of makes sense, too, that you would be, so let's say you start a contract September 1st, mm-hmm, and Kurt starts spawning basically the next week
September
for the
1st,
next brood you release, so that's really what you're paying for anyway. Yeah, there's some fish on hand that wouldn't get released in 2019, but you're really paying for the next brood year that would then be a 2020 release. So
right,
that timing, seems like you can make an argument that timing makes sense.
Yeah.
That you would start it then because it is the start of a new brood year.
Right. Yeah, it does kind of line up with kind of fish production timeline.
Right. So anyway, whatever that's worth.
Yeah. And I have the updated, I guess, proposal or what the funding increase would be from you, from McKenzie.
So it was the original bid minus the percent reduction.
Just 100% funded by the Corps. Yep. Yeah. Which I think was like a $200,000 increase or something
that
like,
sounds
around
about
that
right,
range.
That's what ODFW's portion has been for a fiscal year. Yeah.
Right. I do know, I'm just putting this out there, that Tammy's told me the 2019 budget is short a little bit. So anything that I bring up that's beyond what we're currently doing gets scrutinized.
Sure.
But in this case, it's more of a legal court order than anything.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, while we haven't done it, I think the option that ODFW could always exercise is simply not to release the fish, and I don't know that that's in anybody's best interest.
Right.
but it has been a costly endeavor for the state to absorb that for whatever it's been, 4 years.
Yeah, quite a while now.
So,
understood. Okay, the next one is trout, which is at Desert Springs. Jeff, while you're on the phone, do we have the rest of the 2018 stocking schedule squared away? Last I talked with folks, I think that's all good to go at this point.
I think so, as best we could cobble it together.
Okay. And as much as I hate to bring it all up again, we should probably start looking at the 2019 schedule as well.
We sent that 2019 schedule to you guys and Desert Springs, so.
Yeah, I remember seeing that a couple months ago. The other thing to keep in mind for 2019 is that right now, the only thing that's awarded is the base amount of 100,000 pounds. The deadline for awarding additional poundage to be stocked in 2019 is July 1st. That's the deadline that we have with Desert Springs to give them enough time to actually get that production up and off the ground. At this point, it's all unsettled and undecided, but it's not looking favorable that we'll award the entire 277,000 pounds. I don't know that for sure, but from what I've seen, I wouldn't hold my breath for it.
On the trout issue, Andy, and I know it's a little bit awkward just in that we, you know, we were providing trout for many years. Desert Springs is now.
Right.
We still are in this fish management role. Is there a productive, helpful way for us, and it's probably really Jeff and Elise, to provide feedback on the product, like angling reports, concerns, those kinds of things? I think, you know, there's a lot of sensitivity around the contract and
sure.
Desert Springs. As you are, you know, managing the COR, whatever, the contract officer,
yeah.
Would you like that? Would that be helpful? And I'm, you know, positive and negative feedback, because I know I've heard some things. I'm sure Jeff and Elise have too. If, you know, we can pass that along or not, whatever your preference is.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be great to have. I think it should come to Chris and myself.
Okay.
Probably not directly to Desert Springs.
Sure.
That's where a lot of the sensitivity is like we have to be included in all these conversations, or talk to us and we talk to Desert Springs. But yeah, I think that'd be great. Maybe not as they trickle in, but if you could accumulate a couple of, you know, general themes in the feedback over the course of a month or two, and then send us an email or something like that, that'd be helpful. I mean, Chris and I try to get out on a number of the stocking locations and observe and kind of see what's going on. And of course, we've been there for all the McKinsey ones so far.
Right.
But we can't be at all of them.
Right.
And so it is helpful to have other eyes and ears. And we get some calls every once in a while, but I'm sure you guys still get lots of feedback from anglers and catch reports too. So yeah, that would be helpful.
Okay. Jeff, are you getting a number of calls there in Springfield on issues?
Yeah, we actually have a spreadsheet where we're recording the types of things that we're hearing.
Okay, perfect.
So we're also, does anybody in the basin showing up with strawberry disease?
From our hatcheries?
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Had a couple of phone calls. Actually, a guy brought some fish in from Fall Creek Reservoir that were in bad shape.
Yeah, we do see it at Roaring River, typically on larger fish. Off the top of my head, I don't think that we haul fish from Roaring River to Fall Creek.
Fall Creek.
Fall Creek.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I don't think we haul fish up there from Roaring, but.
Yeah, we did this year because we got rid of all the Roaring River's fish.
That might have been where they came from then.
Well, those came from Willamette, Dan?
No, they came from Roaring River.
Okay. Okay.
I think we put some in Fall Creek and some in Lookout.
Have you heard anybody catching strawberry diseased fish in Hills Creek?
I have not. I did a couple years ago, but I haven't heard anything this year. Okay. I know that they're catching a lot of fish out of Hills Creek.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of crambos recently.
Oh, good.
Cool. All right. Any other questions about trout? All right. And then the next one is monitoring and evaluation. And I actually made an error in the agenda. I said it wasn't awarded, which actually may have been true when I sent the agenda out. but it got awarded either that day or the day afterwards. But it got awarded to Normando and Associates. And like I mentioned earlier, Chris and I are going to have a pre-work call with them this afternoon and start to nail down the details on the surveys they'll be performing and where those are and what the reaches are specifically. And then we'll be sharing that information with ODFW and NIMS and everybody else. So that's actually off the ground here. It is just a one-year contract. There's no option years to it. So that one will be renewed, or not renewed, I guess, but redone the following year, and it'll give us an option to hopefully correct some of the maybe oversights or missing components of what used to be in there, and then of course kind of what we're scrambling now to try to make up through other avenues, like the work with the O'Malley lab and OSU taking those genetic clips.
You mentioned with the Lemon Valley contract the piece about genetics and otolith sampling, and maybe we could have a conversation if needed, but I'm not sure you could include the otolith piece in there as well. I mean, it would be in hatchery sampling, and I don't know, maybe there's an intent to segregate those two.
I would like to not segregate those. Right. I would like to bring them together, because I think they're kind of, well, inseparable.
Exactly.
Like we've discussed before. So
that could be a better fit than a tag onto the O&M.
Yeah, that's true. For sure. Yeah, because then you end up like with this weird split where O&M is kind of doing some M&E, but that information needs to be shared with the other contractor. Yeah, it's kind of weird. So, yeah, good thought, Ryan. Cool. Okay. If there's nothing else on those, the last thing we had on the agenda was copepod prevalence at adult traps. Rich Piaskowski asked me just to bring this up with the hatchery managers and get kind of a general feel for what you guys have been seeing in the last couple of years. I know after the Willamette Science Review, this has gained a little more attention, and there's been a couple of internal meetings at the Corps recently about issues with copepods, and just getting a little more visibility on the issue. So I don't expect any data sets or any reports or anything, but and I know, Ryan, you actually brought this up a couple weeks ago, but general trends or observations of copepod prevalence?
I had talked to Carl Schreck and Jim Peterson a while back, maybe a month ago, about their, I don't know if it was their concept paper or their potential proposal to the course concept paper.
Right.
And so I think emails we bounced around between the managers on the call. Maybe each of them can kind of reply with their general thoughts. I think, you know, it sounds like my general assumption, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, when we collect fish, the prevalence tends to be low, unless it's those kind of odd, low, warm water years. We, at the facilities where we don't treat with peroxide or formalin, the prevalence at outplanting can be higher at times. Where we do treat, and at Willamette would be treating only for broodstock, we don't see high prevalence of copepods, likely due to the therapeutic treatments.
Right.
So If I missed anything or mischaracterized anything, feel free to jump in, guys.
Well, at Mackenzie, we're treating the outplants along with the broodstock, so there's just a lot lower incidence of copepods. I mean, you can compare fish that come in September to fish that have been on hand, and boy, it's a difference there. You know, fish coming out of the river in September have a lot of copepods.
And you're just treating with hydrogen peroxide there, Kurt?
Correct.
My understanding of the concept paper was the concern that potentially the outplanting is the source of copepod transmission, and it likely might be, but at least in the case of like Mackenzie, what we're treating, we could actually be reducing the prevalence of copepods in the outplants. Now, we're not treating it Minto and Foster. We're probably generally not going along either, but...
Right. Mm. Yeah, Greg or Brett, any...
I think the comment that, you know, the warmer, lower water years, we see more. We've held those Brighton Bush fish, later these last 2 years, but we've also had colder water and haven't seen, you know, a big problem. Do they have some? Yeah. Has it affected health? I don't think so.
Yeah, we only put wild fish above. We only outplant wild Chinook, so... As the season progresses, I mean, they do have more copepods just coming straight out of the river. And so I don't think our holding has anything to do with that. I know we do also, just on a side note, we do get people bringing in rainbow trout from the reservoir that are loaded with copepods. And I know that, you know, they don't go in like that, you know. So I just think as the summer progresses, the copepod load in the system just builds. And, you know, I know... our summer steelhead and our spring Chinook, especially by the time we're done holding those fish, they're really loaded with copepods, especially their gills.
Just out of curiosity, is there a reason that we don't treat broodstock at Minto and Foster?
It's not necessary. They're not getting a noticeable amount of fungus.
Just generally.
Ford did a great job designing some holding ponds.
Yeah, I mean, it's cold water, they're deep, we don't have public access, so they're not getting spooked. It's just, you know, when you can hold your fish at between 50 and 52 degree water all summer long, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those deeper ponds really help the flow of the temperature.
Sure. So you do see some more copepod growth and prevalence throughout the season, but not enough to warrant treating.
Yeah, so yeah, copepods generally we wouldn't treat generally for copepods. We would treat for external fungus or, and then treatment of the copepods is kind of a byproduct.
Yeah, got it.
It sounds like what? Hydrogen's more, effective on copepods than formalin.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But we don't have dilution for hydrogen. We could dilute formalin, but not hydrogen.
Okay. Dan, do you have any other insights?
I think formalin works just as good on the copepods. I think the hydrogen worked better on the fungus, and that's why we went to the hydrogen peroxide more than anything.
Yeah, I have to agree with that too, Dan. I think that formalin did well on the copepods also.
I know we have, we get copepods on our rainbow trout in our aquarium pretty bad. And we've tried everything and it doesn't do squat. We've tried hydrogen, we've tried formalin. It doesn't affect, the only thing we've been able to do is actually pull them out, anesthetize them, and physically pull them off with tweezers.
So, wow.
Yeah, I mean it doesn't do anything to ours over here, at least.
Yeah, we, as far as our broodstock that we hold, it just kind of maintains it until, like everybody said, the later in the year you go, the more you can't control it anymore. But I think one of the other things that we fight too is having that earthen pond. You want to talk about a breeding area for anything that's falls off the fish, it's right there. I think with the concrete bottoms and stuff, it flushes out a lot quicker than it does with ours. But like I said, I think we're just doing it more or less. I mean, we used to do 5 days a week, and now we're down to Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, just because by going to 3 days a week, we didn't see any decrease or increase in what we were treating. So it's just cheaper on the budget.
Huh. Interesting. Cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys. I'll take this information and pass it back along to Rich and company.
On that note, and yeah. So you and I and Dan exchanged some emails about the Middle Fork pre-spawn mortality
right.
study design. I saw an email in the Harmony group about comments to Rich. Would you like us to officially provide comments to Rich on that? You wanted to, or just share that conversation?
I don't know. So I actually passed on both of your guys' comments to this woman, Rachel. I don't know if you've seen her name pop up yet. She just got hired. She's working with Rich's group.
Okay.
And it sounded like she was going to take the lead on this
okay.
study. So I had a call with Rachel, I think, last week. And just let her know the concerns that both Dan and you had. So provided those to her. I don't think you necessarily need to provide any more formal comments to Rich.
Okay.
I can let Rich know that I talked to Rachel, but
okay.
I think all that information has been passed
perfect.
Back along. So,
okay.
Yeah,
thanks.
Your voice has been heard there.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I think anything is optional. You know, anything is doable with enough planning and lead time and
sure.
But awarding a contract this time next year to do things that are effective would be challenging.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right. Cool. Yeah, and especially with procuring a new truck, it'll take a little bit of lead time and some work and obviously some funding as well.
Okay.
Cool. All right, that's all I have on the agenda today, unless anybody has anything else they'd like to discuss.
Hey, Andy, this is Greg. The electricians were just down here from Detroit. They were wondering what the status of the boom truck for Minto is this year. Sounds like they were hearing that it might not happen.
Yeah, so we've had some discussions with Eric Peterson and Dustin Bingston. Those guys are actually really against purchasing a boom truck or a lift truck. They'd much rather rent.
Okay.
And that's just for a number of reasons, some of the liability associated with owning one of those things and making sure it's maintained.
Okay.
So it sounds like rental, yes, we're going to get money in place to fund either a long-term or a short-term rental
okay.
of a truck to stage down there, but probably not going to purchase one.
Okay, I think maybe misinformed. They were hearing that nothing was going to happen at all, and they were pretty concerned. So passed that along.
Yeah, no, we definitely got to do something. And I saw an email from Greg Eichmann the other day talking about the same thing. I think Tammy or Chris got back to him, but I'll go back and check, make sure that everyone's hearing the same thing. But yeah, it's our plan to fund some kind of rental so that we can access the breaker that's way up there off the ground, try to avoid any emergencies like last year.
Sounds good.
So I saw Chris Walker yesterday at
yeah.
Cole on the
all
inspection,
right.
And he asked me what I knew about an issue that had happened to Minto with a hopper. Is this the same issue? Did you have an issue, Greg, with a hopper yesterday or 2 days ago?
What's that?
Have you had issues with a hopper recently? Chris, I talked to Chris Walker yesterday, and he asked me what I knew about an issue that had come up about the south hopper. At Minto, it sounds like.
Just one of the wires on one of the north button on the south hopper, just had a loose wire, so they just pulled the pendant apart and fixed it. And
okay, so that is a different issue than the breaker.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, this was the issue. I think it was last year
right.
where that breaker got flipped for whatever reason.
Yep.
And we. Yeah.
Okay.
Couldn't access fish that were in the hopper off the ground.
And yeah, they just want to be able to inspect the brakes and the clutch and
you know, obviously the cable too. So
right,
important stuff.
Get up there if we need to.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Greg. Anything else from anybody? Cool. All right. Well, thank you guys for calling in. Appreciate you accommodating the switch in days. Sorry about the phone hang up there. But next month we'll be back on to our regular Wednesdays. All right. Have a good rest of your week, guys.
See you guys.
You too.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.